there is a question of whether we even want to be free, whether we want to take the trouble. I mean, I think that's what happened to the Roman Republic. When the Roman Republic fell, I think they were just done. They were just done with being free, and it was just easier to stop getting the government to work, to stop making the Senate come to decisions. It was easier to have a princeps, as they call them, the emperor, figure things out. And then, in fact, for the first, 30, 40 years of the empire, things went better than they did before. And people were actually in some ways, every way but the political way, in some ways, people were freer in Augustus and Rome because they were ready to give up, as the satirist Juvenal said, they were ready to give up their vote for bread and circuses, for welfare and shows on Netflix, basically. That was what they were doing. It seems right now that China and the Communist Party are on the rise. They are celebrating I think it's today. They're celebrating their 100-year anniversary of the party, not of their rule of China, though they're coming up on having ruled China for, I think, 74 years, something like that. But this is their 100-year anniversary of the party. And it's really interesting because it is now morphed as socialism always does every single time, as communism always does. It is now no longer really a communist party. It is just an absolute party of power. It's essentially a fascist party because it allows certain free market principles to apply, but it controls everything. And if you have three party members in your company, then there's got to be a party. You've got to have let the party meet. And basically, the party controls every aspect of life, including social life. And they have a system for working your social ranking that is incredibly tyrannical, incredibly intrusive. And of course, they put people in prison camps and they abort children without the mother's permission and all this stuff. They're a tyranny state. They have no tolerance for dissent. Their social credit system, that's what I was looking for. The social credit system gives you privileges based on conformity and adherence to the party. They put people in re-education work camps, and they're trying to export this system to the rest of the world, and they're doing really well. In Australia, Australia started to call for an independent probe into the origins of COVID-19, or the Chinese virus, as we're not supposed to call it, or the Wu flu, or the Kung flu, or the Flu Manchu. And they called for that. And so immediately China banned exports from a number of Australian beef facilities and placed an 80% tariff on Australian barley. Don't you dare call for any investigations over there. And of course, we know that they have completely taken over some of our companies, Disney and the NBA, Comcast, Universal is Han. Sorry for saying Taiwan was a country. They cannot make a movie that tells the truth about China because China will shut them down. And the thing about it is just how willing our corporations are to do this. Google got caught developing a censored search engine for the Chinese market. I can't remember. It's called Firefly or something like that, or Dragonfly, maybe Dragonfly. And they called them out. And they said, oh, we've shut it down now. But they're slowly working their way back into the Chinese market. There's this guy, what's his name? Munger, Warren Buffett and his friend. Is it Robert Munger? I can't remember his name. They were interviewed the other day and they said, oh, China is doing great. Here's two guys, billionaires, right? Absolute billionaires. And they said, we made a lot of money, but that's Charlie Munger. We made a lot of money, but that's not why we did it. We wanted independence. We wanted to be free. We wanted to associate with anyone we want. Oh, but China is doing everything right. Here's Munger talking about it.
Jack Ma is one of the swingers. So they just cut his, they said, the hell with you. He basically gave a speech when he said to a one-party state, well, you guys are a bunch of jerks, don't know what you're doing, and I know what I'm doing, and I'm going to do it better. And he was going to wade into banking and no rules and just do whatever he pleased.
He also brought Chinese, banking to a lot of
the Chinese
people.
Communists did the right thing. They just called in Jack Ma and say, you aren't going to do it, Sonny. And I wish we had a... I don't want all of the Chinese system, but I certainly would like to have the financial part of it in my own country.
So here's Charlie Munger, who got rich. He's talking about Jack Ma. Jack Ma is the Charlie Ma. He's a big businessman in China. And China started to clamp down on the banking system, started to clamp down on the financial system. So Jack Ma made a speech about it. Jack Ma hasn't been seen since, I don't think. He's disappeared. We don't know whether he's been kidnapped or whether they just suggested he disappear. But they love that. Munger and Buffett, they think that's great. They want independence for themselves. They got rich so they could be independent, but it's independence and for them, but not for you. And so I really wonder, like, you know, just how much, you know, when you have a system where Twitter knocks you off their platform for talking about Hunter Biden's laptop because they want to make sure that Donald Trump doesn't win the election. Or if you say the election was dishonest and there's plenty of evidence that there was fraud, you get shut down for that. If you think global warming is not a crisis, which is another way the government gains power by causing panic about global warming, then you're shut down. You're not allowed to call it global warming because the world is not always getting hotter, so they call it climate change. If you said the Chinese virus started in the Chinese lab, you get shut down. If you say men can't become women, you get shut down. So if you can't speak, that's the Chinese system. That's the system that these rich guys want. And there's a question about half the country thinks, yeah, that's fine. That's fine. You know, that's all right. That's what gives Donald Trump so much power. It's because here's Donald Trump. He had one of his rallies. Thousands of people show up at these things. The guy isn't president anymore. He's nobody anymore. He shows up at these things and hears something. He says, cut 13.
They planned it out. Earlier this year, the Biden administration issued new rules pushing twisted critical race theory into classrooms across the nation and also into our military. Our generals and our admirals are now focused more on this nonsense than they are on our enemies. You see these generals lately on television? They are woke. They're woke.
That's why Trump is powerful. That's why people show up for Trump, because he speaks. He says the things that he sees. Listen, you know, they're talking about him running again. Friends of mine who know him say he will run again, and I'm not so happy about that. But now they're moving to stop him by basically investigating his company. They indicted the Trump Organization's finance chief, Alan Weisselberg, and they perp walk this guy. They handcuff him and perp walk him for... Basically, what they're claiming is that he received perks, you know, hotel rooms and cars and all this stuff, and didn't pay taxes on them. And they call this, it's a major scheme to avoid taxes. Well, this happens a lot, and and normally the guy isn't arrested. He's not indicted. They fine him and all this stuff. But they're perp walking this guy. They're going to basically put the squeeze on him, hoping he turns over Trump. This is third world dictatorship stuff. Why are they so afraid of him? Not because he's an authoritarian. Because he wasn't. I don't even think he was a particularly good statesman. I mean, he was a good politician, but he didn't get a lot accomplished in terms of passing laws because he was so mean to people. They wouldn't vote for him. He couldn't form coalitions. But still, they're so afraid of him simply because he calls them out, simply because he speaks the truth. So now they have Maggie Haberman. And I love Maggie Haberman. She works at the New York Times. She used to be working at Politico, and when they hacked into Hillary Clinton's emails, they found one that said, what did they say? We feel that it's important to go with what is safe and what has worked in the past. They're trying to spread news, good news about Hillary Clinton. We've had a very good relationship with Maggie Haberman at Politico over the last year. We've had her tee up stories for us before and have never been disappointed. So the New York Times hired her to cover the White House, and here's her telling you exactly why they're indicting people in the Trump Organization, because she thinks and she thinks it will stop Trump from running again. Here she is.
He will be much older. He is not a young man. So there's that on its own. And then if he is dealing with, and this is an if, but if he is dealing with the reality of a trial in, say, 18 months, and the New York court system moves pretty slowly, it's hard to see somebody running for president with a trial playing out about how their company did business with potentially damaging testimony. I understand that there are some people who want to argue this provides rocket fuel, and yes, this will make him run again. I've heard that from a number of Trump aides. I'm not convinced that that's the case.
You know, the attack on excellence, the encouragement of dysfunction, all of this is are symptoms of a society, certainly a failed elite that doesn't want to lose its elite power. But that is so accepted by so many people in the populace is also evidence of a country that may not wish to do the work that it takes to be free anymore. That's what we're going to have to see. And on our side, listen, when I say I don't want Trump to run again, it's because I don't think Trump will win if he runs again. I could be wrong, but I do want Trumpism to remain around. And I think the best thing Trump could do is to basically select somebody to represent his philosophy in the world who is a little bit better at the inside politics of governing. That would be good because it's not about Trump. It's not about anything except freedom. It's not even about right or left anymore. It really is about, do we believe that human beings, individuals, the ordinary man and woman, should be free?
The Chinese Communist Party just had its 100th birthday. And quite frankly, it was really disgusting to see all the American corporations that congratulated the Communist Party on its happy birthday, CCP, Chinese Communist Party. Now, for almost 30 years, we've been hearing from, not just from the left, even from some of the so-called neoconservatives, this notion that China is liberalizing. And as the doctrine goes, China must liberalize because that is the inevitable effect of market capitalism. Capitalism, in other words, causes people to enjoy economic prosperity. As they enjoy more economic prosperity, they demand to get more rights. I want the right to speak. I want the right to speak my conscience. And so this puts pressure on the government to give you not merely economic rights and liberties, but also civil liberties. Now, it's very instructive against this sort of mythology, I would call it, about China, to see how the Chinese themselves see it. And amidst all the deafening and massive celebrations in China, beautifully organized, I have to say, with grudging respect, I've got a transcript of Xi Jinping's speech to the Chinese. Now, what's good about the speech is this is not a speech tailored for the Western audience. It is aimed at the Chinese. He's talking to his fellow Chinese, and therefore he's giving his view, the Communist Party view, of China itself. And we think of China, we often hear in this country in articles and places like Foreign Affairs about how China broke with its kind of longstanding Marxist tradition, that beginning with Deng Xiaoping in the 1980s and continuing with Hua, and then now with Xi, the Chinese have moved into kind of a new direction, a direction that's more kind of harmonious with the West. The Chinese have moved away from insularity toward a kind of global involvement. And all of this is seen as to the good. But this is sort of not the Chinese view at all. In fact, Xi begins by talking about, quote, the glorious journey the party, and he means not China, he means the Communist Party, has traveled over 100 years of struggle. And he talks about how the party is the leader of, quote, the rejuvenation of the Chinese nation. What he means by rejuvenation is China having been a third-rate country, a backward power, humiliated time and time again, going back to the Opium War of 1840, that China is now becoming a superpower. And I think their goal is, he doesn't say this explicitly, to become the sole superpower. So not to share superpower status, not to have a bipolar world in which the U.S.-Soviet rivalry is replaced by the U.S.-Chinese, but rather to have a unipolar world in which China is sitting at the top and everybody else sits kind of around it in tribute. He talks about the fact that the Communist Party is explicitly Marxist. He goes, in 1917, Marxism-Leninism was brought to China. And he talks about the fact that the Chinese have Marxism, quote, with Chinese characteristics. So in other words, kind of a distinctive form of Marxism. But there is no sense, as you read this, that the Chinese have repudiated either Marxism or socialism. In fact, he says, by carrying out socialist revolution, we eliminated the exploitative and repressive feudal system that had persisted in China for thousands of years. So he credits the socialist era, the era of Mao, for example, for having wiped out the kind of ancient tradition that went all the way back to Confucius. And then he goes on to say that, yeah, we now have a market economy, but he says nevertheless that it is, quote, a highly centralized planned economy, which is to say that this is a state-run capitalism, almost a kind of new notion. It is capitalism in that you have industry, you have trade, but it is trade that is being orchestrated and directed from the center, and is directed by people who do not consider themselves to be capitalists, but rather communists. He takes a lot of credit, and some of it deserved, for raising the standard of living of the Chinese. But this, he says, very clearly involves no expansion of civil liberties and no relinquishing of power by the Central Communist Party Committee. In fact, he goes, we must uphold the firm leadership of the party. Quote, without the Communist Party of China, there would be no new China and no national rejuvenation. The leadership of the party constitutes the greatest strength of the system. And then he says a little bit later, Marxism is the fundamental guiding ideology upon which our party and country are founded. It is the very soul of our party. We will use Marxism to observe, understand, and steer the trends of our times. And then he ends with something very interesting. He says, we will not accept sanctimonious preaching from those who feel they have the right to lecture us. Here he's talking to the Biden administration. Basically, what he's saying is what the Chinese diplomats told the Biden diplomats a few months ago. Back off. You're no one to lecture us about human rights. You yourself confess that you're violating human rights in your own country. He goes on to say, Xi does, we will never allow any foreign bully to oppress or subjugate us. Anyone who attempts to do so will find themselves on a collision course with a great wall of steel forged by over 1.4 billion Chinese people. So this is tough talk coming from China. And it suggests to me a confident tone that Chinese are no longer kind of, you may say, keeping this sort of slinking, silent, let's bide our time approach. Rather, they feel sort of peacock style, ready to strut upon the world stage. And finally, he says, Xi does, we have pioneered a new and unique Chinese path to modernization and created a new model for human advancement. Now, I think what the Chinese here are saying is this. There are really two viable systems of organizing a society left in the world. There is the kind of the freedom approach, the Western approach, which tries to combine economic freedom with civic liberty, civil liberty, and the kind of open society. And he goes, look what the result is. America is a kind of a mess, and Europe is a kind of a mess. And so we in China have a better model, which combines tyranny in the political sense with economic or market freedom. And so we're able to raise the living standards of people. And he implies that's all the Chinese people want. They're happy to have their standards of living improved. They don't care about any of the other freedoms. These are all false freedoms, so to speak, that are being offered in the West. I think what we're seeing here is that China is now taking the place of Russia. And in some ways, it is an even more dangerous opponent than the old Soviet Union. It's certainly wealthier. It has much better technology. And quite frankly, it has more people, which is to say that while the Russians could have put 20, 30 million people on a battlefield, the Chinese can put 100 million people on a battlefield. And that is a frightening thought to contemplate. So as I look not just at the months and years ahead, but over, let's say, the next couple of decades, I think that the United States is going to have its hands full with a very dangerous and formidable adversary, and all of this at a time when America itself is, if not in decline, in a very serious way, divided and fractured, a society, in my view, ill-equipped for this kind of challenge. We just had the celebrations of July 4th, which causes us to think back to the founding of America and the great spirit in which this country was launched out of tyranny and launched into freedom. But for the first time, I think this year and all the time I've been in America, my sense of excitement and celebration was tempered by a feeling of foreboding. Not a sense of personal foreboding at all, but rather a foreboding for the country. Has the American experiment been unwound? Has it been subverted? Are we living in the America that the founders would have wished? What would the founders think if they were alive today? So July 4th for me had this sort of double meaning, a sense of mixed emotions, you might say, because I look around and I look at the way in which the left is trashing not just our culture, not just our founding faith, but trashing our institutions one after the other. And ultimately, if you think about the architecture of the American founding, it was a building of institutions. It's so strange, but we have two fundamental concepts in the founding, the concept of civil rights, but also the concept of civil liberties. Civil rights, of course, has to do with anti-discrimination. It has to do with all men are created equal. But civil liberties has to do with our basic ability to speak our mind, express and practice our faith, our freedom of conscience, our freedom of assembly, our freedom of private space, no unreasonable search and seizure. And it is paradoxical, to say the least, that civil rights is being invoked now by the left to cancel civil liberties. We're systematically racist, and therefore we have to ban hate speech. And of course, hate speech here isn't really hate speech. If you think of what the digital censors are doing, they're not censoring hate speech. They're censoring differences of opinion. And differences of opinion and the expression of those differences is critical to democracy. So our founding experiment is in trouble. Now, here's Cori Bush, one of the left-wingers, part of the gang, the squad in Congress. She says, when the 4th of July, when they say the 4th of July is about American freedom, remember this, the freedom they're referring to is for white people. The land is stolen land and black people still aren't free. Now, I'm trying to wrap my head around this concept of blacks aren't free. In what sense is Cori Bush not free? Is she not free to go about her business? Is she not free to speak her mind? Is she not free to cast her vote? She's in Congress. She has all the freedoms that the founders listed, and yet she feels unfree. And how can that really be? Well, I think the answer to that comes from a line in Mary Chestnut's diary. Mary Chestnut was the wife of the South Carolina senator, James Chestnut. This is in the period of the Civil War. And Mary Chestnut was a defender of the Confederacy. And she makes this startling statement, which is, once the Civil War has already begun, the Northerners, the Republicans, the Yankees are talking about how terrible slavery is. And Mary Chestnut writes this. She goes, "Now, if slavery is as disagreeable to Negroes as we think it, why don't they all march over to the border, where they would be received with open arms? It amazes me." What she's getting at is she's basically saying, well, the slaves must be happy. Why? Because our men are all at the front. We can't, the women and children, by force, hold the slaves. If the slaves wanted to leave, they could. So from Mary Chestnut's point of view, what she's basically saying is slavery must be, these slaves must sort of like it here because they could leave, but they're choosing not to. But I think there's another way to read what she's saying. What she's really talking about is the captivity of the mind. What she's saying is that we have the slaves not just by fetters or chains binding them to the plantation. We've kind of taken over their minds. We've subjected them to a mental captivity. So while in theory they could leave, Their minds keep them here. They're scared to leave. They feel dependent on the plantation. The plantation has become a psychological prison. And here I think we have an insight into what the Democratic Party has actually done to blacks. They have subjected blacks to a kind of mental captivity. And so when Cori Bush says, "I don't feel free," in a way, I guess she's right. She is a captive of a mental prison created in the inner cities by the Democratic Party, holding, if you will, not just African Americans, but other minorities in a certain kind of subjection. Now, in a broader sense, I think for the rest of us who are free, but who nevertheless recognize that our freedoms are being encroached upon, our Second Amendment right to bear arms, our First Amendment right to speak, our First Amendment right to go to church. The left is saying they can restrict the churches under lockdown laws, that they can block free speech in all kinds of ways. And while they say that this is being done by private platforms, it's private platforms that are cheered on and pushed on in the censoring direction by organs of the state. And we see the deep state being unleashed against conservatives and against patriots and against Trumpsters. So all of this means that to some degree, we have to keep the spirit of 1776 very much alive. And by that, I mean, quite literally, the revolutionary spirit. I don't just mean the spirit of thinking back nostalgically to the founding, but keeping inside of us that flame that drove the founders to say enough is enough. The founders, let's remember, responded even to relatively minor forms of subjection. Confiscatory taxes, the Declaratory Act, the Stamp Act. The reason that they responded so fiercely is because they recognized that in principle, if they conceded to the Declaratory Act and the Stamp Act, it gave the British Parliament the right to subject them in all matters whatsoever. And the founders were like, "No, you're not doing it now, but this is the direction in which you are pushing." And that's exactly what's happening in America today. No, we aren't living in the gulag. No, we're not living in communist China. But the end point of where the left is pushing is, in fact, communist China, is, in fact, tyrannical Venezuela, is, in fact, some kind of America as a prison camp in which we become, you may almost say, an occupied people. Now, I realize there's a part of the country that is okay with all this. I would call that the Chavista wing of America. Those are the people who want to subjugate the rest of us. But there's a large part of the country that doesn't want this kind of subjection, that wants to live in the same spirit of freedom that the founders intended. We are the true heirs of 1776, and we better not forget it.